Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, October 28, in the home of the Chicago Cubs, where there's a lot more attention being paid to the Cubs than business or commodities as we go into this weekend at Wrigley Field. Enough about that, because that's what you're hearing on media across the country. Max Armstrong will be joining me on this week's get-together, and Jerry Gahlke, who is a trader and advisor, but he's also a farmer, who always has some interesting things to say about markets and market activity. So he'll be along just a little bit later on, but in the meantime, we have got a lot to talk about, because on Wall Street, we're in the busy earnings season. Oh, and let me make one comment before we talk about markets. Anybody remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, when the government decided AT&T was too big a corporation and had to be broken up? And it was. Well, take a look at AT&T after last weekend, and I think we're well past what we were size-wise with AT&T in the last century. But interesting to watch what comes around, goes around, or what goes around, comes around, whatever. But today, politics came back into the marketplace once again. Each of the three major indices on Wall Street dropped to session lows, with the S&P 500 dropping 1% in an hour, after FBI Director James Comey said in a letter to several congressional Republicans the FBI had learned of the existence of emails that appeared to be pertinent to its investigation. And, of course, the election just days away on November 8. One trader said the headline hit. Everyone panicked for a second that it was going to affect the outcome of the election. The benchmark S&P 500 index fell as much as 0.6% on the session, hitting a low of 21.19 before recovering. The trader said people calmed down and considered what it really meant, that in all likelihood, it really isn't going to impact the election. Earlier today, the S&P 500 had moved up as much as 0.4% after economic data showed the U.S. economy grew 2.9% in the third quarter. That is its fastest pace in 2 years, and some upbeat earnings from Google parent company Alphabet also helped the market, with Alphabet shares up 0.3%. While the economic data supported the case for an interest rate hike, the Federal Reserve just isn't likely to make a move at its meeting next week, just days ahead of the presidential election. Many market participants now saying, look for a rate hike in December before the end of the year. And nearly 3% of the S&P 500 companies that have reported earnings thus far have topped expectations, with growth for the quarter now expected to be 3%. On the negative side today, Amazon suffered its worst day in nearly 9 months, down 5.2%. That put it at $776.32 a share after the online retailer warned that heavy investments in the crucial holiday quarter would hurt profits. For the week, the S&P 500 down 0.7%, the NASDAQ down 1.3%. The Dow, however, managed to gain, barely. It was up 0.1%. Taking a look at a factor that plays every day in the stock market, the oil market ended the week down today, below $50, to mark their biggest weekly loss in 6 weeks in oil prices. And again, well, all markets do a lot of trading on rumors, but probably oil is the champion in that, because one day they think OPEC will cut production, the next day they say no, it looks like they're not going to do it, and that was the case again today. The price below $50 on both the Brent and U.S. crude, and the feeling is that OPEC will not fully carry out a planned output cut. Even as data showed U.S. oil drillers removed some rigs from production for the first time since June, but that was a tiny number. Oil services company Baker Hughes said two rigs were cut this week, but that ended a 17-week recovery in the numbers supplying the market. But the market's attention still remained on disagreements within the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries on whether or not they are going to cut production. Brent crude down 76 cents for the day, and U.S. Texas crude down 2% for the day. The benchmarks showed a weekly drop of about 4%, and that is the biggest since mid-September. Well, as I said, it was a busy week for earnings reports, and we don't have time to go into all of them, but some of the highlights that maybe give you an idea of what segments of the economy are being affected the most. Tire maker Goodyear today came out with a report that was lower than expected in quarterly revenue. Shipments fell in the Americas, and the biggest U.S. tire maker cut its full-year forecast for operating income, citing a very volatile U.S. truck tire market. Also today, MasterCard, the world's second biggest payments processor, reported a better-than-expected quarterly profit driven by higher spending by customers on its networks. MasterCard's net income jumped 21% in the third quarter ended September 30th. For those of you who like chocolate, well, Hershey's had a so-so report today. Hershey, of course, among the many candies it makes, but they are known for Hershey Kisses and Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, reported a better-than-expected quarterly profit as demand strengthened in the United States and the company spent less on advertising and marketing. Hershey's net sales in North America, which account for about 85% of total sales, rose 1.8% in the third quarter. And then another stock we like to keep an eye on because it says, do Americans and, well, people around the world spend much money on vacations and leisure time? Royal Caribbean Cruises, that's the second largest U.S. cruise operator, reported a higher-than-expected quarterly profit today, helped by demand for its pricier North American cruises and increased onboard spending. Royal Caribbean and their larger rival, Carnival Corporation, benefited in the past few quarters from a return in demand for cruises to the Caribbean. As consumer spending rose in the United States, that allowed the operators to hike ticket prices, and some of the trouble spots around the world also kind of putting a dent into some of the ports that cruise companies have basically as their biggest income gainers. Boeing, based in Chicago, beat profit expectations in the third quarter. That despite declining revenue, which means, I guess, that cost-cutting is having an impact at the world's biggest plane maker. Boeing also notched up its sales forecast for the year, saying it would deliver more jetliners than originally planned. And factoring out a tax benefit, the results showed the effect of Boeing's lean manufacturing drive as it tries to boost profit margins and compete for orders against European rival Airbus amid the slowing of jet sales. We watched the fast food industry this week. Restaurant Brands International, the owner of Burger King, and Tim Hortons reported a second straight quarter of decline in comparable sales at Burger King in the U.S. and Canada. The company's listed shares, which had risen about 26% this year up to Friday's close, fell as much as 3% despite a better-than-expected third-quarter profit. But one of the things apparently driving that decline in fast food sales, cheaper food at the supermarket. More people are cooking at home these days, it seems. Looking ahead, a lot more earnings reports out next week, but of course Wall Street will focus on the Federal Open Market Committee. It starts its two-day meeting on Tuesday, and no move expected days before the U.S. election. What about company? What about other data? U.S. employment and manufacturing data will be in focus over the next week, with next Friday coming out with non-farm payrolls that were added in October. Some analysts saying that could come in at about 175,000. They're looking for the unemployment rate to hold steady at 4.9% for October. So what about other companies that will get attention in the earnings season? Drug giants Pfizer and Allergan report their third quarter earnings next week. Pfizer, the largest U.S. drug maker, which beat out numerous other bidders to acquire Medivation Inc., is expected to report its quarterly earnings and revenue before the bell on Tuesday. Qualcomm will report fourth quarter results on Wednesday. American International Group, the largest commercial insurer in the United States and Canada, expected to report a sharp jump in first quarter income on Wednesday. Media conglomerate Time Warner expected to report an increase in third quarter revenue on Wednesday. And we'll also be hearing from CBS Corporation and several other media companies next week. Starbucks will report fourth quarter results on Thursday. And then next week, we'll find oil and gas producers Occidental Petroleum and Noble Energy reporting third quarter results. So the trade investors will have a lot of earnings reports to take a look at next week as the third quarter earnings report season continues in full gear. What about the harvest of the crop? What about the price of the agricultural commodities? Well, Max Armstrong sitting in the studio with a special guest, and he'll be joining us when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Jerry Gokey, Gokey Group, joining us in the studio here. A harvest time rally. I remember asking somebody about it. It wasn't you, but I remember asking someone back in the summertime, what's the possibility for a harvest time rally? We got one.
Yeah, and we've had one for the last, this will be the fourth year, you know, where we now have come to the conclusion, or the media advisory group have kind of said that, you know, we make our lows around October 1st and go higher. This year, I kind of felt we were ahead of the game all along. You know, there's a lot of questions of why are we going higher in June? I think we went higher in June because we were anticipating that hot weather that didn't come, or that was going to destroy our crop. So we got a harvest, a weather rally a month sooner. We should have got it in July. All of a sudden, now we went down from there and made our lows in September. So everything, it looks like it was shifted a month early as far as the weather concerns, because we've been hearing them since last January. We heard we were going to destroy the crop. And then it didn't happen, and so we made the lows earlier in anticipation of a big crop. And then the next thing that happened is, now how do I get my hands on that physical inventory? If you're an end user, crusher, exporter, cattle feeder, and of course everybody knew that we're going to have piles on the ground, and we always do, but you got to get the farmer to let go of it. And he got some backdoor money from ARC payments are coming in. They're pretty large. I think Winnebago County, where I farm, is something like $70 an acre for corn. My goodness, you know, that's quite a shot in the arm. That delays having any need for any cash flows until later. So we've seen this cat and mouse game between the farmer and who's selling. And the last thing I heard was a lot of elevators were surprised. They're taking in beans. In fact, they said, we're awash in beans, or we have a glut of them. And some of them were thinking they wouldn't take anymore. Well, now it rained, caused things to delay, or delay harvest. But they said, surprisingly, farmers weren't selling.
One thing that we're noticing here is that soybean yield seems to be climbing. I mean, it's already a good-sized crop, and it's going to get bigger, and still we're seeing this kind of market response.
Yeah, I think that's indicative of how the people in the do this for business and in the government, maybe have underestimated the global demand for protein for quite a while now. Same thing happened last year. You know, last year at this time, people were looking for $7.50 beans because we're going to have 450 million beans left over by the end of last year's marketing year that ended this August. And we didn't. It was, you know, it was right at 200. So they missed it by big time, 50%, you know. And so I think that surprised a lot of people. And then, of course, we got on this hype about, well, China's economy, you know, it's going to implode and all that. Well, that didn't happen. And they're smarter than maybe traders than we give them credit for, because they were buying cheaper stuff when they could. So it speaks well of total global demand, which is very close. In the case of soybeans, our demand might be higher than what we produce this year. And that means global stocks are pretty acute, meaning they're pretty tight. One mistake by a major exporter, which would be South America, Argentina, Brazil, or United States, Paraguay, Uruguay, wipes out our 300 or 400 million bushels of carryover pretty fast, or half of it. So pretty exciting times we live in.
Will we have to see some kind of a signal from South America of crop problems to keep the bull fed, if you could call it a bull?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, I guess. Maybe the $6,400,000 question now that times have changed. But the market is a futures market, so it's anticipating what if, you know, and you look at the price and say, if something happens, beans could go up a lot more. Who knows whether the Argentine farmer will actually sell. He may hold these because he's going to plant less. That's his currency. And so far, they've not done him a justice in a tax thing on beans. So I think we kind of like we did in July, June, we kind of priced our weather markets a little higher than what they were maybe should have been, like in corn, 454, I think was a high. So we may do that in soybeans to make sure that we got enough. You know, and as a buyer, you kind of put yourself in that place. Say, would I rather lock in probably $9.50 beans or $9 beans in that area when we had them? Or should I roll the dice and try to get 880 or 850 that some analysts think we could dip down to? It's more important to get your hands on the food, as we've seen, than what maybe risking 30 or 40 cents. So you could pay $12 or $13 for beans if South America had a bust again. It's pretty tight, you know. And we're the only storehouse in town until April, probably.
We haven't yet finished the harvest in the United States. It's gone well. It's been average. Some growers that I've talked to in East Central Illinois were just as happy as could be. They were able to roll nearly every day, very similar to the harvest of 2015. But we haven't got it all in yet. What if we were to turn off rainy and struggle to get the rest of the crop?
Yeah, and we've had that, and now the week ahead looks pretty good again. We're awful close in beans, and I think if you get within 90% done, then you have to look at it and say, I've got plenty of stuff in stock now that I really don't need that extra 10% until next May or June or July at the end of the year, where in beans, 10% is 400 million. So that's about our carryover probably going to be. So once you've 90% done, you've got it. The thing is, we have trouble harvesting it, getting it, but you can't destroy much anymore the closer you get to being done. And I think, and also from a farmer's standpoint, you got to look at that. What are we going to do with the last 5 or 10% of corn? Are we going to just dump it because we ran out of room in storage, or do we find a home for it somewhere? And from the end user standpoint, it says, boy, if I haven't bought this stuff now, and harvest lows are behind me, what will I have to pay for it once Jerry shuts the bin door and goes to Florida or something, you know, for the winter? And what price is it going to take again? And God forbid that we have a corn or soybean problem in South America, then farmers get even tighter fisted and they hold even longer.
400 million bushel soybean carryover. That sounds like a big number, but you often hear people talking about pipeline supplies, quote, pipeline supplies of 100 million or so. Put in perspective how burdensome 400 million bushels is.
Well, it's more burdensome than 250. 250 doesn't allow you much room. 400 million allows for a little sludge factor in there. I don't think anybody knows exactly what the pipeline is, but it's probably in that 125 million. So when we had a 250 million bushel carryover, there isn't much left. You know, you almost spill that much loading and unloading it, you know, in the United States or the globe. But 400 million is 450, it could be. I mean, bean yields could be 52 or 53. We've not found any, or we found hardly anybody. In fact, I couldn't name one that had a yield under 50 bushels an acre in the United States. Yet our yield nationally is 50. North Dakota, they're 10 bushels better than they ever have been. Illinois is better, and it just keeps coming in. It makes me nervous of how big that crop is, and we probably won't know until January. And that's because if you were in the government's position, you've got to take what I tell you. But one thing you don't want to do is anticipate a big crop and then come back in a month and say, oops, I made a mistake. prices now dropped a dollar. It wasn't really 55, it was, or 54. It was really 51.5. We messed up. They do not want to do that because they got egg in their face then.
The skeptic in me would say they're being real cautious ahead of the election, but I guess I should know better than that. These are career bureaucrats who crunch the numbers regardless of who's in the White House. Let me come back to something you said. You used the name Jerry in talking about the farmer, and you are a farmer, about locking that bin door and going to Florida. It underscores, does it not, the necessity to really stay on top of what is happening, especially in the basis around your grain bins.
Right. And I think most farmers will probably have enough sold either forcibly or otherwise by their banks, or they did a good job of marketing where they've got their cash flow covered for a while. If you think about it, any seed company will, if you buy the seed from me, I'll float you a loan interest-free until when you can pay for it. So we're not as reliant on banks as we once were for our seed and some of our fertilizers. Some of these co-ops will extend credit. And so it's not as... it's not a cash-driven market as much right away that forces me to sell. So you've got other bankers out there because if they can even charge me 2%, that's more they're going to make in money in the bank. So that kind of takes the pressure off. But still, banks are pushing guys. And I don't get asked to speak at banks very often because I think they seem to be a day late and a dollar short because they usually panic when it's too late. They should have been doing some things, proactively, so the farmers had grain sold to cover their cash needs, And one time, I think Orion said once when about his father, he said when they told him when times get good, they're going to get bad, and when they're bad, they're probably going to get good. So we know that this isn't our first rodeo, so we should be well prepared for cash flow needs.
Well, I have to ask you about that. There's a fair amount of hand wringing already about what this winter is going to hold in that period. December through March, I heard one ag economist the other day say this right now is the calm before the storm, that there will be quite a bit of concern out in the countryside. What about those meetings between farmers and bankers? And we're hearing more of these reports of farmers bailing out of cash rental arrangements simply because it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work in some cases. And, of course, it depends on how much money a farmer has borrowed. But, there's a lot of farmers that are pretty well healed. They've been around a long time. If you bought your land in the 70s and even 80s and paid too much for $3,000 an acre, that looks pretty good now. So I think there's probably 15% of the farmers, and I don't know if that's quantity of farmers or quantity of land that they farm, that are probably in trouble. Federal Reserve Board in Chicago has an annual ag conference that's pretty good. And a couple of years ago, that's what they kind of looked at, 13, 15% of the farmers. And those are probably farmers under 45 that have never been through an economic crisis that perhaps listened to their accountant and bought machinery and wrote it off. And
so you don't think that number is spiking significantly higher in this current situation?
I don't think so. I don't think we'll – I think with the price of grain now, we've come up off since September of 50-some cents in corn and pretty significantly in beans. That's kind of helped a lot. And you also have this number when you get – I looked at my own situation. I'm getting 10 bushels an acre more than normal in beans that were over my APH or my planting number. 10 times 9 is $90 an acre more than I have. Multiply that times 1,000 acres. It's significant. So that yield, even though prices have been reduced, that yield has made up for it a little bit. 20% more in corn or 10% more is like getting 10 to 30 to 40 cents a bushel more. Suddenly, the $4 a bushel you wanted on your APH is there. You just came around it through a back door. And we were very fortunate to a lot of people had good yields but a low price. But and insurance didn't work this year for the revenue side. But there are cases, where you could farm in North Dakota or Mississippi and your county is a bust. You need that insurance. This year, everybody seems to be in good shape, even Ohio and Michigan that were dry. I've got good bean yields.
Farmer Gokey, good talking to you as always. Jerry Gokey, Gokey Group. Also, we should hasten to point out, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As you heard in Max and Jerry's discussion, this soybean market has surprised a lot of people, I think. As a matter of fact, it's been an unusual year. When you go back to the early part of June, there was a weather rally in the market then, and now we're looking at a demand rally, I think, particularly in the soybean market. But there is concern that South America will make a bigger cut into Chinese purchases of U.S. soybeans because they have the beans and they're able to deliver them. So we may find a little more competition coming from that South American market. I noticed also that one of the main soybean-producing states in Brazil is now 68% planted for the next crop. But another story that certainly concerned China made the news this week. It's not going to be quite as easy as some people thought to get the acquisition, ChemChina buying Syngenta. State-owned Chinese chemicals group ChemChina apparently ready to offer more concessions to win European Union antitrust approval for its $43 billion bid for Swiss pesticide and seed group Syngenta, clinching China's biggest ever foreign acquisition, taking longer than planned amid a flurry of deals in the agriculture sector that Syngenta, the world's biggest pesticides maker, said had swamped competition watchdogs. Syngenta expects the transaction to close around the end of March of next year rather than this year as first planned, but it insisted it would go ahead despite increased scrutiny by watchdogs gauging the impact of big deals on farmers and consumers. And Syngenta's deal with ChemChina is one of two under scrutiny by the European Union, while another mega deal involving Bayer and Monsanto is expected to land on the regulator's desk in coming months. Bayer and Monsanto have not formally requested EU approval, but the European Commission has to consider this deal as well when assessing the ChemChina Syngenta link-up. And another deal involving DuPont and Dow may not be quite as easy as they thought going into the proposed merger acquisition. And I think that will make some people a little more comfortable about it, because I continue to hear from U.S. producers and other people in the ag industry on the impact that lesser competition in the seed and crop protection industry could have on prices for producers. So as we look at the end of the week, soybeans showed pretty good growth this week, but today they sort of turned around and ended down 13 cents for the day. But Monday they'll still start above $10 by 1.25 cents a bushel. $10, 1.25 cents a bushel. The corn market today also came under pressure, with the December contract ending the day at 3.90 and a quarter after dropping 2.25 cents. And wheat, which has its ups and downs, but again, we have to come back to the fact that the world has a huge supply of wheat, and it makes it difficult, even though Egypt, the world's biggest buyer of wheat, has come into the market and done some purchasing. There's still more than enough wheat out there to meet the demand. And so the December wheat contract will start Monday at 408.5 after losing 5.5 cents today. We did see some pretty good increases in both cattle and hog futures this week, but today, cattle market, for the most part, turned around. Now, keep in mind, on Monday, the last day of the month, the October cattle contract will terminate. It will trade before that termination, starting at $104.20 a hundredweight, after gaining a dollar and seven, or after gaining just 7 cents today, while at the same time the rest of the cattle months down anywhere from 50 cents to 75 cents for the day. The November feeder cattle contract will start trading Monday at $121.55. after dropping $1.97 today, and the November feeder cattle contract will start the week at $121.55 after dropping $1.97 a hundredweight today. Next week, Steve Alexander will be sitting in for me again as I head for another Convention of Young People, the Ag Future of America. That's our time, along with Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.